Well, good morning. I know what you're all probably thinking. What in the world is he doing up there in front of the church at this point in the service when it's time for the sermon? Am I right? Right. It's a very good question, a very good question. After all, I am neither a pastor nor a preacher. I'm not a minister. I'm not a reverend. I don't think I've even played a clergyman on stage anywhere. And I didn't stay at a Holiday Inn last night. The truth is, I have never preached a sermon. Not once in my life. And to be totally frank, there's only one reason that I'm up here this morning. I just can't say no to Pastor Nate. About 6 weeks ago, there I was, minding my own business, and I asked Pastor Nate what the sermons were going to be like during the Christmas season. And he said, well, there were going to be a series on the important figures of the Christmas story. And then he said, out of the blue, would you be willing to speak about the wise men on December 31st? Now, if any of you have ever been on the receiving end of one of these questions like this from Pastor Nate, you'll know what happened. He looks so earnest when he asks you those things. He's got that twinkle in his eye. He's got that smile on his face. And so, what's a guy supposed to do? My immediate reaction, even though knowing all of these limitations that I just mentioned, was, well, sure I will. What could possibly be wrong with that idea? So here I am. I said, okay. Now, the only condition that I made was that I get to use this big older pulpit rather than that new sleek acrylic one that Nate likes to use. Now, I'm sure our mental health professionals in the congregation, Rick Wolf, Dan Dobler, Oann Steer, if she were still here, I'm sure they'd have some deep psychological explanation for why I need this big pulpit up in front of me. But the truth is, I just need some space to spread out my papers. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. You know, I guess it's not entirely correct that I've never preached a sermon before. There was that time, many years ago, when I reenacted a part of Jonathan Edwards' famous Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God sermon. Does anybody remember that? Yeah, I was afraid somebody would. Well, that was part of what we had then called the Fifth Sunday Service Committee. How many remember that? For those of you who were too young to remember that or who weren't members of the church then, the Fifth Sunday Service Committee was formed back in the days of John Benson's ministry in order to give him some relief from having to preach every Sunday. And so the idea was that in those months during the year when there were five Sundays in the month, this committee would plan the service, including an alternative to John preaching. And that way we could experiment. We could try different things. So that's how I ended up doing a part of Sinners in the Hands of the Angry God. But for the most part, the committee's efforts worked pretty well. But not always. There was that time that the featured music was Dolly Parton's Working 9 to 5. And another time that the substitute preacher, who shall remain nameless, Gene Frost, took off most of his clothes to make a point. And then there was the one other time that the speaker whacked a wiffle ball off the forehead of an older lady who was visiting church that Sunday. I don't think she ever did come back. So not every one of those Fifth Sunday services was a winner. Well, that brings us back to this morning. If you look at your calendars, you will notice that today is the fifth Sunday of this month. So, in the spirit of the old Fifth Sunday Service Committee, here I am. Now, I hope that with God's help, you'll find something meaningful in what I'm going to share with you this morning. But just in case it does go a little bit sideways, be assured that at least there's no 80s country music that's going to be sung or played. I'm going to leave all my clothes on, and there will be no hard plastic flying objects coming your way. Well, over the past 4 weeks, we've heard about the main characters of the Christmas story. We heard about Joseph and Mary and the angels and Jesus. And today I want to talk with you a little bit about some other folks, the three wise men. Now, they were also known as the three kings or the magi. They've even been given names over time, you know, Caspar, Melchior, Balthazar. They've been immortalized in song and on the silver screen. But the truth of the matter is we don't really know very much about them or even who they really were. They're only mentioned in passing somewhat in Matthew's gospel, as you heard read earlier, and nowhere else anywhere in the Bible. In many respects, they are like those fellows on horseback that kept tracking and chasing Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. You know, that's one of my favorite movies, but I digress. Anyway, those are the men about whom Butch and Sundance continually asked each other, who are those guys? And that is a very good question. Who are those guys? And maybe more importantly, why should we even care about who they are? What can their story, assuming we can figure out what their story actually is, mean for us today? Now, before we can answer that important second question, we really need to answer the first. So, who are these guys? Well, first, I think we have to clear up some misconceptions and some downright mythology that's evolved over time about we three kings, as described in the hymn that we sang earlier when the kids came up. We need to say right up front what they were not. First, they weren't kings at all. They were magi. Now, magi is a term that loosely means wise men that came from a priestly class, and they developed in that part of the world from which they came, which most probably is thought to be over in Persia. And secondly, as Wendy pointed out, there were not just three of them, and there is certainly no historical proof that they were named Caspar, Balthazar, or Melchior. Warren Wiersbe, in his commentary on Matthew, says that when the caravan containing the Magi arrived into town, it was sufficiently large enough that that caravan troubled the entire town. They were foreigners, and there were a lot of them. And they were noticeable enough that it caused King Herod to call them into his palace to interrogate them. Now, the final misconception about them is that they were there at the time of Jesus' birth. Now, unlike Alexander Hamilton, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, in their time, the Magi were not there in Bethlehem in the room where it happened. In fact, they did not arrive until several years after the birth of Jesus. So, all those nativity sets that include the kings and their camels, like the one I had when I was growing up, they're just inaccurate. So if that is who they are not, then who, in fact, were they? Well, as I said, they were magi, or wise men by name, and priests and astrologers by profession. They were most likely Medes, who were part of the remnants of the Persian Empire, and they were very important people in their society as advisors to the Persian king. And because they were astrologers, they were careful watchers of the sky. And in fact, they saw the bright star that shone over Bethlehem on that night Jesus was born. Now, they were also what were called king seekers. They watched the sky to see evidence of dramatic change, which could foretell something that was new going on in the world. And they were aware of the Jewish prophecies foretelling the rise of a new king of the Jews. After all, the Babylonians had taken the Jews into captivity, and included among those captives were surely their priests and others who knew what the Old Testament taught about the coming of a new king. And the Babylonians had been succeeded by the Persians. So those prophecies would have been well known to the Magi. And so it only made sense that when they saw the star, which shone so bright that it could be seen from hundreds and hundreds of miles away, of course, they took off to follow that yonder star and to find out what it was all about. Now, there's been a great deal of writing done by biblical scholars about the deep theological meaning behind Matthew's telling of the visit of the Magi. Michael Green, in his commentary, talks about how their story shows an outreach to the Gentiles. And Craig Keener, in his commentary, talks about how this story challenges the prejudice against pagans. And Warren Wiersbe, in his commentary, talks about how this story demonstrates homage to the king. Truthfully, trying to understand all of them is a little above my ability to process it. I was trained in an entirely different area of education. But frankly, for the purposes that I want to get across to us today, it's not really necessary to understand the story of the events that took place 2,000 years ago on that deep of an intellectual and theological level. I believe that there are some clear lessons in that story that we can see and apply to our lives today, however deep our level of understanding of its theological meaning may be. And not surprisingly, I believe that there are three lessons in this story for us to learn from and to use in our personal walk and search for the King Jesus. First, sometimes that search is long and difficult. It took the Magi probably 2 years or so to get from the palace of the Persian king to the humble house of Jesus, who is Christ the King. And that is likely because of the length of the journey that was required. Now, when I was preparing for this morning, I looked around the church and I came across Pastor Rick's map of the area at the time of the events surrounding Christ's birth. So, looking at this map, we can see that Bethlehem and Jerusalem are right here, okay? And the likely home of the Magi in Persia was way, 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 way over here in the choir loft. Now, of course, there were no planes, trains, or automobiles in those days. And so the pace of travel for the Magi would have been measured not in miles per hour, but in miles per day. And the Magi were traveling on foot or perhaps on horseback or camelback. So assuming they could travel at 5 miles an hour, pretty good pace for walking, not counting rests and so forth, a good day would move them along only about 50 or 60 miles. So it would take a while to get from the choir loft to the pulpit. Plus, it wasn't an easy walk in the park either. The verse in the hymn that we sang talks about traversing field and fountain, moor and mountain, following that yonder star. A topographical map of the route would show mountains, deserts, rivers, seas along the way. It was very, very difficult terrain to overcome, and the rigors of such a long trip would have been potentially crushing, both physically and emotionally. And then, when they finally did get close to the finding of the king, they met opposition from the very powerful King Herod. He called them in. He attempted to flatter them, to intimidate them, to turn them away from their search for the king, but they were not deterred. They continued to follow the star until they found where the young Jesus, probably no more than 2 years old, was. So that is the first lesson that we can learn from the Magi. Like them, we should not be deterred in our own personal search for Jesus. There are, and there will be, times in each of our lives where finding Jesus in our own situations may seem impossible, that he seems too far away from us. There will be times when the moors and mountains that we need to traverse in our own lives may seem impossible to overcome. And there will surely be occasions in our lives where opposition that we encounter from our friends or family members or co-workers or society itself seems overwhelming and just too strong to stand up to. But just as the Magi persevered and ultimately found Jesus the King and paid him homage, so can and must we. So the first lesson that the story of the Magi teaches us is that the journey to find our king may be long, and it may be difficult. It can be successfully made if we just keep our eye on that bright star of Jesus and the gift that his birth, life, death, and resurrection can give us. Now, the second lesson is something that was foretold by Wendy, quite surprisingly to me, because I thought Gene Peterson was doing the kids' message this morning. But it is a lesson that is worth repeating. That lesson is that when we do find the King, we need to give him our very best. For the Magi, it was to give Jesus gold and frankincense and myrrh. Gold, of course, then as now, was the most usable and valuable means of buying and selling things. Wherever anyone traveled in those days, there were other local means of exchange, but gold was universally accepted. And frankincense was an oil that had both aromatic and health purposes and benefits, and thus had great value. So for health purposes, it was kind of an early form of those essential oils that remain in vogue today. It could be used for a personal benefit, or it could be exchanged for other necessities, such as food and clothing. And myrrh was another fragrant resin that had great medicinal benefits, as well as the ones that Wendy talked about. It's often referred to as bitter tasting, and it was, but it also had the capacity to act as a tonic, or as an astringent, or as an antiseptic. So it had value for personal use, and also as something that could be used in exchange for other necessities. In short, in the time of the Magi, these were the commodities that had the most worth. These were the things that showed that when you cared the most, you gave the best. Now, because of their positions in society, they could afford to give gifts of such value, such great value. But not everyone then, as now, was a Magi, or an advisor, or a king, or an important person. Not everyone could then, or can now, have the financial resources to give expensive items to the king. But the good news for us is that our king only expects our best. In Mark's Gospel, chapter 12, verse 14, there's the story of the widow who gave just a mite that represented all or most of what she had, and about how Jesus praised her for that. Our gifts don't have to be the biggest, the brightest, or the most expensive. And while returning a share of our financial resources to the king is required and important, our gifts don't have to be just financial. They can be the gifts of our time, our talents, our very selves. And they do not have to be the best on some objective scale. They simply have to be our best. And this lesson is freeing us from having to worry about how to honor the king when we do find him. The little drummer boy in song had no other gift to bring other than playing on the drum for the baby and playing his best for him. And in that song, both Mary and the baby Jesus nodded and smiled at this gift. So we can all give our gold, our frankincense, and our myrrh by giving our king the very best, whatever it is. Now, the third lesson that this story has for us is that it is all right to be late to the party. That's the title that I picked for the sermon this morning. In this story, on the night when it all happened, the angels and the shepherds were there. Mary and Joseph were there. But the Magi weren't there. They were nowhere near the stable outside Bethlehem where the king was born. They were miles and miles away. But they saw the star, and they came when they could. God did not need them to be there in that moment. They were not needed to proclaim the king's birth because the angels did that. They were not needed to spread the word of that birth to the people in the countryside around because the shepherds did that. But they were needed several years later in order to help protect the king. And they did so by telling his parents of the meeting that they had had with Herod, which led then to the angel telling Mary and Joseph to take Jesus and to flee to Egypt. They gave him their very, very valuable gifts, which they were then no doubt able to use to provide for their needs while they were on the run in Egypt before they could return and Joseph could get back to his work as a carpenter. And what I think that this means for all of us is that no matter where we are in our search for Jesus, he can and he will use us when we are needed. The king's party is ever going and everlasting. Now, I'm not saying that there's no absolute deadline for accepting Jesus as our king, because obviously there is. When he comes again, we don't want to be on the outside looking in. And as Jesus himself said in Matthew 24:42, keep watch, because you do not know on what day the Lord will come. But just as the Magi saw that star far, far away and set out to find it, so must each of us accept the king and start out to follow him. It's okay to be a little late to that party, because it's never too late for each of us to be used by our king for his purposes. But when you hear that call or see that bright shining star, respond to it and begin to follow it and search out our king. It's never too late to seek forgiveness or reconciliation or the love of our king, even if you're a little late doing so. The Magi did it. Millions of people since have done it. And each one of us right now, right here in this place, here at Faith Covenant, we can do it too. So, our search for the king may be difficult, may take a while. But when we do find the king, we must give him our very, very best gifts. And so long as we are truly following the bright star that is Jesus, it's okay to be a little late to the party. So, three lessons for us to learn from the three Magi, or however many of them that there were. Let's pray. God, our Father, at this season, we are so thankful for the gift that you have given us in the birth of your Son. We are thankful for the bright star that you caused to be shining so that the Magi could come from far, far away to pay homage to the King. We pray this morning that, like that bright star, the knowledge that we have of the gift of Jesus is something that we can see, that we can feel, and that we can follow. Be with us all as we leave this place, as we search for our King, just as the Magi sought for Jesus those 2,000 years ago. Amen. Our closing hymn is number 146. Six. That's what I said. Joy to the world. The Lord has come. Let's stand and sing it.